from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we discuss the recent shooting in the Bayview section of San Francisco in which a young African-American was shot to death by police officers. We'll try to sort out what occurred and find out how the police and the community are reacting. Then at 9:30, the focus will be on recent erratic weather and what it means, especially in terms of climate change. Forum is next. Join us for the program after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Saturday, a 19-year-old Washington State resident, an African-American named Kenneth Harding, was shot to death by police in the Bayview District of San Francisco while allegedly running from officers conducting a Muni fare inspection. After that, things get murky. The officers allege that Mr. Harding fired a shot at them, while witnesses in the Bayview community have claimed otherwise. We try in this Forum segment to find out what occurred, and we want to discuss the responses of both the police and the community, as well as the ongoing and likely aftermath. Jason Von Derbeken is with us. He is a reporter of the San Francisco Chronicle who covers police and public safety beat, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Marie Harrison, who is community outreach organizer in the Bayview. Welcome to the program, Marie Harrison.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we're also going to have Sharon Ferrigno with us, who is Chief of Community Relations for the San Francisco Police Department. Let me begin, Jackson Van Derbeken, with you, because you've been covering this. We have really two different stories here, it would seem. A guy is shooting or being shot by the police over a transfer, as opposed to a parolee who is not wanting to be detained and shot at the police. At this point, what do we really know between those two versions?
Well, police yesterday presented what they say is evidence that shows that he fired a shot at them. They confronted him on a Muni platform in a busy part of the Bayview in broad daylight. And at that point, they say that he fled and fired at least one round over his shoulder at them, which prompted them to fire as many as 9 rounds at him. That's their account. And they seized a firearm, ultimately, that they say was left at the scene. And there's a YouTube video that shows something that some people say is a firearm, others say is not. But in any event, they did seize a weapon. They will be able to determine whether that weapon had recently been fired and possibly determine whether his DNA is on it, even though it did pass through other hands. So right now, they say they've interviewed independent witnesses that confirm their account. I think a larger issue, of course, is whether, you know, in this context, people in the community feel like the police fired in a busy area, possibly putting other people at risk. And also, there are some questions about how the scene was handled after that, that he was left there after being mortally wounded. Some people say he was just basically, the police were more concerned about, you know, sealing off the crime scene, such as it was, than attending to him.
There was a video, in fact, of him lying there in blood and the police standing actually with their weapons drawn because of concern perhaps for the community. Peter Keene, former police commissioner, said the police did not really do anything in terms of misconduct. But the police have also produced a tape which suggests that there was a shot fired, haven't they?
That's right. It's from what they call the shot spotter system. And that was the evidence they had, that there was one shot fired by a series of disc shots that they say were fired in response by their officers.
And there's also a good deal of information that's come out about this young man, about having served time for prostituting a 14-year-old and supposedly being a person of interest in a killing up in Seattle. How is this playing out, I mean, in general?
That unlike a number of other officer-involved shootings in which, in some cases, the loved ones of the person who was ended up being shot by the police arrive at the scene, begin verbally and otherwise. otherwise, you know, crying out. This case had, you know, there were people at the scene who were upset at the police, but there were the family of this man who is now, you know, we don't know exactly why he was here, if he was fleeing the Seattle police who hadn't identified him publicly as a person that they were looking for, but perhaps he knew that they might. We don't really know. They say that they didn't have enough evidence to arrest him. But obviously the San Francisco police figured it out somehow that he was a person of interest, that the police did want to speak to him up in Seattle related to the slaying of a 19-year-old woman who was apparently, according to her family, just caught in the crossfire of a dispute up there in a near a housing project in South Seattle.
Jackson Van Der Beken, again, is a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle who covers police and public safety beat. And Marie Harrison is a community outreach organizer in the Bayview. This has been sort of murky, a lot of rumors, a lot of narratives. Can you give us a general sense, Marie Harrison, of how the community, we're reading about how outraged the community is?
Well, the community is outraged, and they outrage on outrage actually on several different levels, but most importantly, from the information from, let's see, one, two, three, at least 10 people that I know of, and including business owners that were there, who are a little leery of, and I said, you know, sometimes you're going to have to just speak out. One of the things that, the questions that came to mind is that immediately after shooting the young man in the back, there was no mention of a gun. They couldn't find one. Everybody that I talked to thus far claims that there was a cell phone on the ground, but they didn't see a gun. This is why and then they showed a picture of a young man supposedly who had in a gray striped hoodie who was supposed to have bent over and picked up the cell phone and the gun. And it took them a day and a half to come up with, oh, well, he was wanted by the Seattle police anyway in relationship to another incident. And I guess the question is, when did you know this? Okay. And how long had you known it, I said? And when did you decide that this was a young man in question? Was it only after the gun fires where the gun was shot? There's too many unanswered questions. And if he was a suspect, why then did they not stop him for that? Bus drivers were saying it is not their practice to hold up a whole bus line over a $2 bus transfer, okay? And so, you know, there is room for a lot of outrage. There's also room, there's raising other issues in the community with the police and a lot of the unseasoned officers who are working in our community, that they don't have the sensitivity or haven't developed the sensitivity to work with a predominantly black community, a community that's already feeling like they're being shut out and stepped on at any rate. So you raise the bar when you start sending newly trained, non-seasoned folks into the community, and these kind of things happen. And then in order to explain it away or to make it, quote, all right, now he was supposed to have been guilty of trying to prostitute a 14-year-old girl. Then that wasn't outrageous enough. Then all of a sudden we hear out of the clear blue sky he was wanted in a shooting case in Seattle, Washington. But the reality was that they said he was being questioned. They stopped and was questioning folks who were getting off of the T train. This is what I don't understand. If he was getting off of the train, why are you then stopping him to ask him about a transfer? Who else did you stop and ask for a transfer who was getting off of the T-train? Ideal-wise, when they do that, when they go on and they ask for verification, they're actually on the bus itself, and they remove them from the bus. If you don't have a transfer to show, then you're removed. So what exactly is the standard? What do you do? What's the rule? How do you work that out? Is it according to whatever the officer or feels like they want to do at the time? Is there a standard set rule?
The community would like to know the protocol here, obviously.
Yes,
I mean, that's essentially what you're saying.
We definitely need to know the protocol. And then when is it excusable? permissible to shoot at up to at least 9 times into a crowd of people at one somebody.
Maybe we can get some answers. So we have a police official here, and we're going to talk with her. I want to give out the phone number, though, because I know there are many of you who would like to join this conversation with your questions or comments, and you're certainly welcome to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Again, if you'd like to join the program, you can do so by calling us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. Marie Harrison, again, is community outreach organizer in the Bayview, and there will be a town hall meeting at 6 this evening at the Opera House in the Bayview. There was, in fact, yesterday, a meeting with police, and we're going to talk to Sharon Ferrigno of Community Relations, San Francisco Police Department. Let's first hear, though, Chief Greg Suhr and his comments.
I can tell you that I'm very sensitive to how the community feels about this, because I've been in this situation before. I want to push this information out as fast as we get it. I want to reassure the community as to what happened, and I want to demonstrate with certainty as to what the facts of this case are.
Okay. And again, let me rectify something I said. That town hall meeting is tomorrow at 6 p.m. in the Bayview Opera House. Sharon Ferrigno with us is Chief of Community Relations for the San Francisco Police Department, and thanks for joining us.
Hello there.
Hi. You heard Marie Harrison raise some serious concerns in the community about standards and about the necessity of shooting that many times, particularly standards with somebody not having a transfer. Perhaps you could address those first, if you'd be kind enough to.
Okay, well, I can't speak to specifics of the case because I truly am not involved in it. However, I can say that when officers are called, they're dispatched and they respond. And then what happens from there, I think, was predicated in this circumstance by the events that unfolded. But anytime a citizen calls the police, it goes to our dispatch board, and then officers are assigned a call for service and they respond.
Well, this specific incident, tragedy, there are three separate investigations going on. And one of the controversies that seems to be holding sway is whether or not the police officers who were involved in doing the shooting ought to be named. Is there official position of the police department on that is not to reveal the name of the shooter, correct?
I believe so. I'm really not privy to that component of the investigation. Well, my role is community policing, so I conduct the outreach for the police department, and we'll be participating in the meeting tomorrow night at the Opera House and working closely with the community to try to build bridges and reduce friction.
And how are you going to do that?
Well, I think the first step is in meeting with the community, and as the chief said, he takes this very seriously. He's going to share the information he has as soon as he has it and is able to give that to the community so that we let the community know that we're being transparent. What we know, they'll know the moment he's able to share that information. And I believe yesterday the chief mentioned that, you know, we work really hard with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families and the mayor's office and the Critical Response Network to really work closely with communities, specifically in the Bayview. And just one incident like this sets us back. So we feel very strongly that it's imperative that we, you know, work very closely, hear the community's concerns, and address it as best we can.
Well, let us go to a caller here who does have some of those kind of concern you alluded to. Al, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Al Norman from the Bayview District. And as far as I'm concerned, the Bayview District's SFPD, they're constantly bothering people. It doesn't matter your color. You know what I'm saying? So if you're young, you're going to get messed with, period. If you're on that bus, that just gives them the right to mess with you. You don't even have to be doing anything. They're going to bother you. If you're young, you're black, it doesn't matter. It's just a profile. If they constantly, if they got a quarter to make, they're going to make that quarter that day. And they're constantly messing with people, it doesn't matter. You can change your life. You can show that you're changing your life, and they're going to mess with you, period.
Let me get a response from you, Chief Ferrigno. You hear that kind of indignation, and what do you say to somebody like Al?
Well, I would invite Al to please come to the community meeting tomorrow night, and we can, you know, sit down and discuss the issues he's concerned about. Of course, we don't have quotas. Officers respond to calls for service, and we work closely with the captain at Bayview Station. Paul Chignell has a community advisory board, so he works very closely to hear the neighbors and the community's concerns. We are always working to improve our outreach. So I welcome Al, and I hope that he'll attend tomorrow so we can address this.
We thank Al for the call. We go to another caller, and that's you. Larry, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I just have one question that nobody seems to have addressed yet. What about the residue on the young man's hand? Because that seems to be evidence that would clearly indicate whether or not he had actually fired a weapon or not.
It's a good question. Jackson von Derbeken, can you help us?
Well, the gunshot residue would normally be a very good indicator to indicate he did fire a weapon, and presumably they did capture that either at the scene. Sometimes in the haste to get him treated, they might take him to the hospital before they have the chance to actually do the kind of test that would need to verify that he had fired a weapon. So the chief hasn't addressed, you know, what that test, whether it was performed and what the results are. Once again, the weapon that they retrieved, you know, I'm sure they're going to be looking at that as well to determine whether it had been recently fired and also whether his DNA is on it. And that's not a difficult task. Usually if the person has had the weapon for some time, their DNA will be on it. So there will be either the gunshot residue on him to confirm that he fired a weapon. Of course, that when people fire weapons at someone, sometimes there's residue left there too. So, you know, it's not always a definitive determination.
Well, nor are the videos. There are a number of them. But Marie Harrison, let me go back to you on the whole question of the gun, because there was a young African-American man. He did not get on camera with his face, but you could see his hands, and you know, it was clear that he was African-American and from the Bayview, who said that he took a picture of a gun that had disappeared, according to police, and that he saw the fact that the gun was lying there. Are you familiar with this, and do you have any comment on it?
Well, as of yet, out of, how many people did I talk to? Actually, how many people did I just talk to yesterday? No one has actually acknowledged, actually seen a gun on the ground. Several folks, however, acknowledged seeing a cell phone on the floor. I'm not neither excusing the fact that there was a gun, supposedly. What I am saying is that too many questions arise. And you have to think about it along the line of a community that's already being overwhelmed with a lot of different things. One, if there was a gun, isn't the first action to retrieve a firearm, like, right away? You don't leave it laying on the ground in order for someone, especially if it's been discharged, okay? Two, you always, when the person is pronounced dead and as long as that body laid on the street, you don't just ship him off to the hospital and then later on try to test his clothes and hands to see, because I am aware that there are tests that will show that there was blowback from using a gun on the hand, on the hand, on the shirt sleeve, or what have you, that kind of stuff. I'm told that's actually one way of seeing. I'm just saying that they left too many questions to bear, and all of my information doesn't come from just the young folks and the folks that were standing around on who normally frequent the corner, who hang out there, as they call it, chit-chatting with each other, playing around, doing what they do. Not all good and not all bad. I'm not trying to put that on anybody. But the reality is that how are we to have confidence in a police department when there are constant complaints about these guys are harassing us? I understood with the young lady who just spoke on behalf of the police department that when they're called out. Well, that brings about another question. When were they called out? Where were they called out? I mean, if they rode this bus, the T-train from one spot all the way to, even if it was just a second stop before they got to Palou, why were they not going through asking for proof of payment then while everybody was on the bus? Why would they wait till they get off of the bus to then decide to do a check
Well, let me give you at least one possible response. I'm looking at an email from a listener named Nancy who said she just heard you say that the police don't check proof of payment when people are exiting the train. That's not true. I've personally been stopped along with everyone else on the train when exiting the metro and asked to show proof of payment by the police. They basically block the nearest escalator in this downtown station. And we're also, Marie Harrison, getting some responses from listeners who let me give you a little sampling of here's a listener who expresses some outrage and says, I'd like to hear a response to the fact that in a community the rest of the city avoids for fear of violence. One would think the community would appreciate the police pursuing a man who is wanted in connection with a murder in another city. There is that feeling outside of the Bayview, of course, that the police are doing their job and that maybe a lot of these complaints, in other words, have to be seen in perspective of the police trying to follow and do their job in a way that's appropriate.
Can I respond to that, please?
Sure.
Because I find it very disingenuous when such a cloud has been placed over Bayview. Bayview is by far not the most calmest community of all. Remember, it's a poor community. We have the highest unemployment rates throughout the entire city. We have the highest amounts of being disregarded, disneglected, and just kind of overlooked in the entire city. No one wanted to live here in the very beginning. Now all of a sudden there is this great big prospect of all of these, quote, jobs that I have not seen yet, and I'm waiting to see these jobs materialize. And everybody's interested. Folks are able to come in here that never wanted to come here before now and buy homes because people are being uprooted and moved out. But you are condemning an entire community off of the bad works of a handful or a few. The possibility that people hang out on the corners here does not always mean that they're doing something bad.
No, no one is. I hope that no one is maligning or stereotyping this community. On the other hand, Jackson Van Derbeken, there is a sense that maybe the community needs to be more apprised of what police practices are. I mean, we've heard that certainly from Marie Harrison.
Well, I think a couple of things come to mind here. One, it's the police have said that this was a fixed base, fixed post location where these officers were working on a regular basis, and one of the things they did do, according to the account provided by the chief, was check to see if people had properly paid their fare on the Muni line there. It's right on the platform. One thing that's kind of, I guess, missed in all this is there's been a dramatic drop in homicides and violent crime in the Bayview over the last 2 years. Gang homicides have gone down some 50%, and I think that there is a measure of comparative calm in the community compared to years past. And whether the police take advantage of that time to develop better bonds and relationships with the people remaining, a lot of people have been moved out because their housing projects have been destroyed, turned down. So, excuse me, what there's an interesting time here in which, you know, the police have an opportunity to establish, you know, with this, they have more time to develop ties with the community and they're less being responsive to gang black-on-black homicides, which have, you know, ripped this community apart in the past.
Let me actually get a final word from you, Lieutenant Ferrigno, because as opposed to statistics, as of today, there's a new report out that says there's a 14% increase over officers being killed. So there's obviously great concern about that, too.
Definitely. We are always concerned about officer safety. And, you know, the FBI releases crime statistics every year across the nation. San Francisco has been unique in that we have the lower, you know, they've really impacted the reduction in homicides. So, you know, I don't know what to comment exactly on that other than